Steve, today is a very important day.
Wednesday, September 8th. Why is that, Mark?
Well, September 8th, Steve, marks the 55th anniversary of Star Trek. Of course, one of the most influential entertainment franchises in pop culture history. Here is a taste of the show through the decades.
They used to say that if man were meant to fly, he'd have wings. But he did fly. He discovered he had to. I don't believe we can stop.
Space, the final frontier.
These are the continuing voyages of the Starship Enterprise.
Its continuing mission to explore strange new worlds.
Boldly going where no man, where no one has gone before.
Wow, Trekkies, Klingons, whatever floats your boat, right?
Indeed. So to celebrate, our co-host Lauren Gilger got a hold of a true Trekkie, ASU planetary geologist Dave Williams. He grew up with Star Trek and turned his passion for it into his life's work. Here's more.
I was born the year Star Trek premiered on NBC, but of course I was too young to watch it live. I really got into the show when the show was syndicated in the early 70s and was run five nights a week. So it was on when I came home from elementary school. It was on while I was doing my homework before dinner. And those same 79 episodes were running over and over again throughout much of the 70s and early 80s. And it just really inspired me an interest in space science, from growing up watching that, as well as other science fiction shows that were on through the 1970s, as well as the end of the Apollo program, the space shuttle test of the 1970s, Carl Sagan's PBS series Cosmos that aired in 1980 when I was starting high school. All of that fed this desire to want to study space. And so, you know, I majored in physical sciences in high school, and I went on to Indiana University, where I majored in astronomy and astrophysics. But as I was working on that degree, I realized I didn't want to study stars or galaxies or nebulae. I wanted to study planets because that's what the Star Trek crew studied.
Yeah.
And that's sort of where it all began. And that was 23 years ago.
Wow. So tell us a little bit about some of these cool missions that you have worked on. You've worked on a Venus mission, a lunar mission, outer planets, Mars. Like, what's your favorite?
I think my favorite probably has been the Galileo mission to Jupiter, because being trained as a volcanologist who studies volcanic eruptions and lava flow and placement, the innermost large moon of Jupiter is named Io. And it's a very, very volcanically active body, the most volcanically active body beyond Earth. It's got over 400 active volcanoes. Its eruption plumes can shoot material up to the equivalent orbit of the International Space Station if it were orbiting Io. It produces some very, very hot lava eruptions, much like what occurred on the ancient Earth, which I studied for my PhD. So that was sort of the my favorite of the flight missions I've worked on. But as you said, as a grad student, I worked on the Magellan mission, which did the first global radar mapping of Venus at high resolution. I worked on Galileo during the Earth-Moon flybys when we pointed the first digital CCD camera at a planetary body and got images of parts of the moon you can't see from Earth. And then after Galileo Jupiter, I worked on the European Mars Orbiter, Mars Express. This was Europe's first Mars mission, and studying the volcanoes there. And that led the previous decade to working on NASA's Dawn mission, the robotic mission to the two most massive objects in the main asteroid belt between the orbits of Mars and Jupiter. And that's asteroid number 4 named Vesta. And then the largest object is named Ceres, and that's been reclassified as a dwarf planet. From all of that work there, I was asked to join the proposal team for the NASA Psyche mission here at ASU, and we found out that mission was funded in January of 2017, and now we're in the development of that mission.
Now I understand you are actually teaching a class there at ASU inspired by Star Trek and the sort of journey that you've been on. Are you spreading the gospel, or are most people already on board?
I think the students are on board. This is what we call an inquiry class. It's taught as part of ASU's Interplanetary Initiative, which is a pan-university initiative to try and create leaders to help improve and understand humanity's future in space. So the idea is that I'm having the students watch episodes of Star Trek as homework, and from that be inspired by something they see in the episode, and then they're going to learn to write natural next questions based on what they see, and do literature reviews, search for scientific peer-reviewed literature on the topics of interest, and use that in sort of an inquiry cycle to learn something about, you know, whether it could be technology, how do you grow food on Mars? How do you do life support systems? What kind of propulsions technologies do we need? But it could also include, you know, justice, equity, diversity, and inclusivity issues about how can diverse peoples live together and work together in the human future in space. So Star Trek is sort of the inspiration for students to research these topics.
So I have to ask you then, Dave, I mean, like, do you think that in the near future or semi-near future, we will be living in space?
I don't think in the near future. I think, you know, that's something that can and does need to happen. We need to transform humanity into a multi-planet species, if for no other reason than to avoid the dinosaurs' fate. The reason why the dinosaurs are not here anymore is because they didn't have a space program. They couldn't detect and deflect the asteroid that struck 65 million years ago that wiped them out. So the only way to really make sure that that doesn't happen to humanity is to have humanity on multiple places in the solar system. And whether that's a basis at the moon, much like McMurdo Station in Antarctica, could it be a basis, scientific outpost, at least initially, on Mars, orbital habitats, perhaps elsewhere in the solar system? I think that will happen, but we're at the very nascent stages right now because NASA is developing the deep space exploration vehicles. The commercial sector has developed rockets to take both people and cargo into low Earth orbit more cost effectively. So all of the pieces in my mind are in place for this expansion to occur over the course of the next century.
Wow. Wow. Okay. So 55th anniversary of Star Trek is here. And as you are evidence of, this show has meant so much to so many. It's much more than a show, much more than a media franchise. What do you, you know, think that the legacy is here, even as it continues?
Well, I think the most important thing that people get out of Star Trek, and believe me, there's been lots of people who've been inspired to become doctors and scientists and engineers and military officers from watching the original series, The Next Generation, and the subsequent shows. I think it's the optimistic vision of the future, the idea that the way things are now on Earth is not the way that they always have to be. People can learn to live and work together for a constructive and productive and equitable future for everybody. That has continually been inspired me from the original series through the Berman era series, Next Gen, DS9 Voyager that aired in the 90s and 2000s, all the way into even the current series that are airing on Paramount Plus. There's that belief, yes, there are challenges, yes, there are hard times, there's problems that need to be dealt with, but people can learn to work together to solve those problems.
A hopeful view of our future there. That's Dave Williams, research professor in the School of Earth and Space Exploration at ASU. And it is the 55th anniversary of Star Trek. Dave, thanks so much for coming on and talking to us about this. And live long and prosper, I guess I should say.
And to you. Thank you very much. It's been my pleasure.